Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. If you tweet, now you can fleet. Twitter just rolled out a feature it calls fleets, as in fleeting images, text or video that you can share with your followers that disappear after 24 hours. And if you find yourself swiping through these fleets, don't be surprised if you have deja vu, because this isn't a new thing. Fleets are almost identical to Instagram stories. So why is Twitter copying Instagram? And why is Instagram copying TikTok with its Reels function? That's not the only new thing on Insta. Instagram has changed its outward design interface. The like feature moved, and now there's a whole shopping feature, which makes it very easy to shop the gram. And while we're on the subject of imitation, a whole lot of people with hardcore right-wing political beliefs who think Twitter is somehow a tool of the deep state have now started using a copycat platform called Parler, which can get very, very scary because it doesn't moderate hate speech. Washington Post technology reporter Rachel Lerman joins us to walk us through the recent changes to social media and fill us in on the recent congressional hearings and to how Facebook and Twitter handled election-related misinformation. Rachel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
It has been so busy in the world of social media in the past month. So many changes. Let's start with the fleets, these fleeting tweets that allegedly disappear after 24 hours. How are they in any way different from Instagram stories?
Yes. So we're following along with this whole everyone copies everyone in technology, apparently, because Instagram stories, you might remember, really copied Snapchat stories. And now Twitter is basically creating their own Instagram stories. And that's what they look like. They look the same with those little circles at the top, and you kind of click and hold, and then you can see people's what is supposed to be sort of like more live Snapchat updates or, ways for people to share their last-minute mm-hmm. thoughts. But fleets, do we really need this? I mean, Twitter already has kind of up-to-the-date news, and so this is just one more way for them to stay relevant, or try to.
It's funny. This somebody on Twitter, Kyle BR, said, TikTok copied Vine, one of Twitter's biggest failures. Instagram copied TikTok, making Reels. Twitter copied Instagram by introducing stories, which ads Instagram stole from Snapchat. So what is behind this idea and this business model that we're seeing? This was actually going to be my last question, but I think I'll pop it up front, that we're seeing so much imitation.
You know, I think that these companies see something that works well, and then they want a piece of it. And so they know that these stories have brought a lot of engagement to Instagram, and Twitter is trying to find a way to make people that are not just the power users use the site more and make it kind of like more friendly and easier to engage and less intimidating to start conversations. And so they want a piece of it.
My guest is Rachel Lerman, tech reporter for The Washington Post. Fleets, this new feature, Twitter said this, quote, "Some of you tell us that tweeting is uncomfortable because it feels so public, so permanent, and like there's so much pressure to rack up retweets and likes, and that fleets are, quote, a lower pressure way for people to talk about what's happening." So how much of this new feature about Twitter is really about crafting a healthier platform, or are they just trying to keep up with the Joneses?
I think they're really just trying to keep up. I mean, the problem with fleets and with any of these things on a site that moves so quickly is that it's really hard to moderate this content. And obviously, we know that Twitter has all these rules in place about what you can and cannot say, you know, no incitements to violence. They have rules against hate speech, things like that. And some people are already saying that they're seeing these things pop up more in fleets because it might be harder to catch.
It's interesting. There's people have already found workarounds. Somebody has grabbed a screenshot of a permanent tweet and then put it in a fleet. So the idea is like it may not necessarily be something that disappears after 24 hours. It's already been bugs in the system, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So there were some developers that found a way to kind of like scrape these fleets even after the 24 hours and found a way to still be able to view them. That wasn't something that was easily viewable by the public. And mm-hmm. Twitter did address it and say, okay, we had kept these in a queue on our internal systems for slightly longer, and that's how people were able, or that's how developers were able to access these. They say that's fixed now, but you know, like with any new feature, we're seeing these bugs pop up early.
Bloomberg also reported that you can tag users who have blocked you, which could make it harder for users to protect themselves from harassment. And these are things that Twitter has had to deal with forever. Not curbing mm-hmm. misinformation, a lot of harassment. From your reporting and from what you know goes on inside of these Silicon Valley boardrooms, how seriously are these platforms taking these problems of harassment?
I mean, I actually think that they take them incredibly seriously, but we haven't seen a whole lot of solutions to them. Like, we know that they recognize that this is happening on the platforms. We know that they're putting policies in place. We know that they're adding to their moderation teams. And yet, we still see these problems pop up. And companies say, you know, we're doing our best. We're trying to keep up with things. But critics are saying, yeah, well, the amount that it is still happening across these platforms is really unacceptable. And so that is something that these companies always have to struggle with. And I think that it's fair to say that they're not keeping up with it as well as a lot of people hope.
Let's move on to Parler. So for a lot of people, Parler seems like a new thing, but Parler's been around for a couple of years. What should people know about this app who are learning about it for the first time?
Yeah, so it's a social media app. It looks sort of like Twitter, where there's a lot of like real-time updates. There's a lot of news. It looks less like Facebook. There's not a ton of personal information on there. And it's been around for 2 years. And the big difference is that they say they don't censor content. So now there's been all of these calls, mostly from Republican politicians and conservative pundits, saying that Facebook and Twitter label too many, you know, posts now, and they're worried about censorship. And Parler has kind of made a name for itself in this world because it's saying, we're not going to moderate your content. We're not going to label things. Sure, we don't allow illegal things, but pretty much anything else goes.
And to give people a sense of its popularity recently, on November 11th, the week after Election Day, Parler was the number one downloaded app in the Apple Store. And I have to admit, the first time I heard about it was when the superstars on the right started saying, I'm leaving. I'm taking my ball and going home. I'm going over to Parler. I've had it with social media. Folks like, I think, Marita Bartiromo said that, as well as Senator mm-hmm. Ted Cruz and Fox's Jeanine Pirro, urging people to sign up for Parler. What's the experience over at Parler for someone who, say, isn't really that interested in right-wing politics?
I mean, Parler is honestly really filled with right-wing politics right now because of that kind of push from a lot of these prominent conservative politicians and pundits, and because of this rhetoric saying that big tech is censoring too much against its users that has gotten really popular in right-wing circles. Parler has become largely Republican talking points, and that the executives say that they're open to anyone joining, that they're seeing more diversity of thought of people joining. But really, when you look at it, it's a lot of concerns right now, you know, concerns about fraud over the election, some of these unsubstantiated claims that Trump supporters are making. And that's what we're seeing a lot of on Parler.
My guest is Rachel Lerman, technology reporter for The Washington Post. You published a piece yesterday that said conservatives grumbling about censorship say they're flocking to Parler. They told us so on Twitter. So how much do we actually know about how users move between the platforms?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of calls, especially on Twitter, but also on Facebook, of people saying, I'm not going to be posting here as much. Please follow me on Parler. And yet we're seeing a lot of these people continue to post regularly. I mean, it's really hard to leave these dominant social media platforms. That's where the audience is, right? And on Facebook, like, your friends are there, you're part of groups. And on Twitter, that's where the vast majority of people are. Even though Parler has grown to now, we believe, over 11 million accounts, that still dwarfs in comparison to, say, Facebook's 2 billion.
About a month ago, my colleague Matt Katz was filling in for me, and he had a conversation about QAnon. And we had people call in, and they said, you know, what it was like to have family members sort of go down this road. And several callers talked about elderly parents joining Parler. So, you know, opinion bubbles have always existed online. That's not news. But how does the change of an entire platform sort of becoming an echo chamber where there's not necessarily anybody to get into your mentions and make a point or reply with the alternate point of view? How does that change when the whole platform seems to be going one way?
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a good point, which is that on, say, Twitter or Facebook, even though we kind of set ourselves into these little echo chambers by following, you know, other people that we support or things that we believe in, the difference is that on Parler, there's not a whole lot, at least yet, there's not a whole lot of diversity of thought in general. So what you're seeing is mostly people who agree with you. And it's a good question because we're kind of wondering, will that get old after a while? Like, will the app become diverse enough that it's interesting to stay on? Or will people get kind of sick of everyone always agreeing with them all the time?
And I think it should be pointed out, the Wall Street Journal reported that the Mercer family has put money into Parler, correct?
Yes, that's right. Rebecca Mercer is an investor in Parler from the early days.
So just as someone who covers tech in Silicon Valley, does it matter who the investors are? Of course, the Mercers are thought to be very conservative folks.
Absolutely. It definitely matters. And, you know, Parler has put out blog posts and statements that kind of align with a lot of main conservative talking points as well, even though they say that they're open to a politically diverse user base. A lot of what they are catering to are these conservative concerns.
Let's talk about Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg of Twitter and Facebook. They have twice testified before Congress about moderating election-related misinformation. What has come out of the latest hearings?
So what we're hearing from the hearings is a lot of the same things. We hear these senators kind of stick to their personal pet peeves. So we're hearing a lot of the conservatives talk about concerns about censorship on social media. We're hearing some of the Democrats talk about how the election was handled. We're hearing more and more about possible reform to this law called Section 230, which basically gives internet companies legal, like a liability shield against what their users post on the site. And there seems to be bipartisan calls for reform to that. It's just unclear what that will look like.
Is there any particular leader in the Senate that you think, or in the Congress you think, that really has a handle on social media and on tech? Because sometimes, I have to be honest, when I watch some of the senators and congressmen question people, I think they don't really know what they're talking about.
I know. And I think it has gotten better. I think that we all remember that hearing from, I guess, maybe it was 2 years ago now, where Mark Zuckerberg went and one of the Congress people asked him, you know, how does Facebook make money? And he said, Senator, we sell ads. So I think we definitely have seen some of the comprehension go up since then. But we kind of see a lot of the senators parroting talking points that probably their staff wrote for them. There is senators Graham and Blumenthal have introduced legislation to revise that law, that Section 230 law called the Earn It Act. So they're a couple of the ones that are kind of more up to date on what's going on.
My guest is Rachel Lerman, technology reporter from The Washington Post. So I mentioned Instagram has changed its design, its interface with people. A lot of people aren't happy about it. It's been a big shift on where everything is on the face of the page of the post. Why did they go there? I mean, they made two really big changes by moving the like and also making the shopping prominent and reels prominent.
I know. And, you know, every time that any one of these apps changes, I get confused because I'm so used to hitting my thumb on a specific place. And then you have to relearn it. And it's tough. But, you know, the Reels thing is interesting to me. So Instagram Reels is this short form video. It's basically TikTok, but it's on Instagram. And they launched it a few months ago, but you could not find it in the app. It was so tough to find. You had to like go to explore and then click a tab. And so now it's right at the bottom, which will hopefully make it, you know, easier to find. And I think that they're hoping that means that'll make people use it more because, of course, TikTok has a huge head start on this. The shopping is interesting to me, too. Putting it more prominently just makes it even easier for these influencers and ads, you know, and advertisers to get their products in front of you, which is, of course, how these companies make money.
Yeah, I just opened it up. It's like right smack in the middle. You can't miss the reels now. Let's talk about TikTok. We've mentioned it a couple of times. There's some news where Trump has attacked its data collection, said it's a tool of the Chinese government. You tweeted out an article with the headline, TikTok says the Trump administration has forgotten about trying to ban it. So what is going on with the Trump administration and TikTok at the moment?
So it's interesting. There's two things going on. There was the ban order where Trump said, okay, TikTok's basically going to have to shut down in the U.S. And that has been challenged in court by two separate cases. And both of those cases got that ban halted. So currently that's kind of weaving its way through the court system slowly, but there's no immediate concern that TikTok is going to get banned. The other thing that's going on, though, is there was a separate order saying that TikTok's Chinese parent company, ByteDance, had to basically sell its TikTok assets in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And that's still ongoing. That they got a short extension on. And so now the new deadline is Friday. But this deadline has been quite changeable. So we're not sure exactly what will happen on Friday. But it is possible that TikTok will actually create this new deal that involves investments from Oracle and Walmart.
And finally, President-elect Biden is preparing to take over in January. What is on the tech industry's mind with a Biden presidency on the horizon?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, and we're still kind of waiting to see where exactly Biden is going to take this. But for a while, there was thought that, you know, maybe Democrats would be more willing to work with the tech industry. But in the last couple of years, we've seen kind of opinion shift to concerns about market dominance of these huge tech firms and concerns about privacy. And we don't think that the Biden administration is going to let up on those. Of course, we know the Justice Department has filed a suit against Google, and we believe there's another one from the government in the works against Facebook. And there's no reason to think that the Biden administration will let up on that. In fact, they could possibly even expand those investigations.
And before I let you go, what is a story you think that has been underreported in 2020 in terms of social media and tech?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. You know, I think just because of everything that's been going on in 2020 and all of the misinformation that we've seen spreading across social media, I do think that we've lost sight a little bit about these privacy and AI concerns, especially when it comes to facial recognition, which we're seeing used, you know, more and more widely across so many sectors. And so that's something I think we're going to continue to hear about.
That documentary Coded Bias was amazing about that.
Oh, my gosh, it was fascinating.
My guest has been Rachel Lerman, tech reporter for The Washington Post. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.